It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning. If you had been in New York City yesterday, that's what you would have heard downtown. When Chelsea Clinton and her child were there celebrating, they were all saying, you know, I am a Muslim, I'm a Muslim. And of course, many of them were Muslims. In fact, one of the organizers for the Women's March, Linda Sarsour, was there. She reminded people about the executive order that Democratic President FDR passed, which put Japanese Americans into internment camps, implying that Muslims and minorities could possibly suffer the same fate under a Trump presidency. And then, of course, the Muslims there shouted Allahu Akbar, which means God is greater, which means he's greater than the God of the Americans, who was not Allah, by the way, at least of our founding fathers. And so that's what happened in Times Square yesterday. And it's really interesting that that was just fine. But what happened on Friday night in Florida when Melania Trump in her beautiful red dress got off the plane, came down to introduce her husband and said this.
Let us pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
All right. Well, that's the way she introduced, right before she introduced her husband. I was just stunned, honestly. English, I think, is Melania's fifth language. She speaks many, many languages. So that doesn't bother me. The passion with which she spoke the Lord's Prayer, and the reason that she chose it, I don't know. But it just seemed to me that there's something going on in the heart of Melania Trump. You would not choose that randomly. You wouldn't choose it to gain anything politically. You wouldn't. Why would you choose it? You would choose it if God was doing something in your heart. That's what I think. That's just my opinion, my impression. And I just thought it was beautiful. And the thing that you couldn't hear, when you have a recording like that, the recording is being taken from the podium mic, which means you can't hear the crowds except people right behind her. You will notice, like in the second phrase, the people join in. Now, I wasn't there, but you can hear them, because if you listen, you can hear that the people in the crowd start to say the prayer with her. I wish I could have been there. I mean, it's just amazing. But the point I started out making was she is being absolutely excoriated for doing that. Just terrible things. Of course, there's just the obvious things that the left would say. Not every American is Christian. Country over party. Yeah, but it's okay for the Muslim call to prayer to be said in the streets of New York and Allahu Akbar being shouted. That's fine. That's fine. But this is not fine. Because somehow, you know, the God of our fathers is sort of icky, passé, and it must be suppressed. No, it must not be suppressed. And Melania did an absolutely beautiful job. They accused her of plagiarizing. They said at least this time Melania plagiarized the Lord's Prayer from the Bible instead of Michelle Obama's Trump rally. Remember when she first spoke at the convention and I don't know what happened. I don't think that was an accident. It's a conspiracy theory. I think somebody set her up. How would she know that the words that she used was from Michelle Obama's speech? I tell you, whoever wrote her speech, I always felt that that was an intentional thing to put her in that position. So now they're accusing her of plagiarizing the Bible for her speech. It's just amazing. I want you to listen to it one more time. And listen in the second phrase. See if you can hear other people joining in with Melania Trump reciting publicly together the Lord's Prayer. Let's listen.
Let us pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Wow. Just moves me deeply, touches me deeply, because the Holy Spirit in me just leaps to hear that. And forgive us our sins as we forgive those who've sinned against us. You know, you think of Melania's history. I just think the body language says there's been a change in this woman. And then certainly her heart and mind is open to different things. It's just amazing. Okay, so now, of course, the responses to that, I think this is really interesting. This morning there's an article by Kit Daniels, came out yesterday, talking about how Reddit, who is a big, I'm not sure even how to describe it, it's sort of a town hall, would probably be too small of a saying. They have different segments in Reddit that comment. Lots of people are on Reddit. Millions of people are on Reddit, as a matter of fact. And now we know that they're filtering out posts on the Donald subreddit from appearing in the popular segment. So Kit Daniels says pro-Trump posts are buried the most by Reddit moderators. And then he quotes Steve Huffman, who's the CEO, vowing to suppress certain pro-Trump posts from appearing elsewhere on Reddit. Okay, so, but they're not the only ones that are doing that. Let me just say that the largest social media sites, I'm reading this from Kit. I've told you this before, but I'm going to read his words because he's the expert. The largest social media sites, including Facebook and Twitter, have suppressed Trump supporters and perhaps even the president himself. Twitter, in particular, is apparently censoring positive responses to Donald Trump's tweets while showcasing the negative ones. February 7th, Twitter announced it was collapsing potentially abusive or low-quality tweets in the interest of safety, which, of course, is a catch-all term which gives the social media giant carte blanche to suppress anything it deems offensive. Anyway, according to the New York Times, Kit writes, three current and former anonymous employees claim the company has had a new tool developed specifically to restrict certain kinds of posts from appearing in users. All right, I've spent a lot of time on that, but I just wanted you to know about it. There's another big story that took place. This actually occupied my day a lot yesterday. Milo Yiannopoulos, who is a Breitbart editor and contributor. Milo's name is familiar to you somewhat, probably because he has been treated horribly on college campuses. He is, in many regards, on his opinions, conservative. Certainly he's not in consort with the opinions of the leftist professors of college campuses. So there's been a lot of violence. There was violence in Berkeley over him coming. And so people, you know, felt defensive about him. He should be allowed to speak. Well, CPAC, which is the largest conservative conference in the country, you will recall, perhaps if you listen to me, I go every year and broadcast on Radio Row. I'll be there this week. CPAC, the presidential candidates come, all the pundits, the news outlets, it is the biggest gathering. But it's conservative, political action conference. They've had divisions in the past over whether to allow the Log Cabin Republicans, which is the homosexual branch of the Republican Party. And as a matter of fact, when Matt Schlapp took over at CPAC, Matt had worked for the George W. Bush administration. Matt sort of sorted that out. And there was a distinction. It was like, no, we are conservative and we are not going to branch out that far. Well, they have been playing with, they've been become more permissive on that because the culture has changed, and because gay marriage was legalized, I'm sure that's part of it. So they took a quantum leap and invited Milo Yiannopoulos to be a featured speaker at CPAC. But the problem is Milo, of course, is gay, but that's not the only problem. It's now been reported, and this is what came to my attention yesterday, that Milo was on video saying some absolutely unrepeatable things, endorsing pedophile and priest sex abuse to young men. And he's very explicit about it. It's very graphic. It's very upsetting. And so the wheels began to turn and things began to fly. And as of last night or late yesterday afternoon, CPAC had rescinded its invitation to Milo, and Breitbart itself had pulled back from Milo because of his comments on that tape. Milo tried to defend himself by saying that was edited, set up, but in my review of those tapes, I don't see how it could be. And so and then of course there was a dilemma about, personally, I'm being honest with you, whether I could go. I couldn't go and be at a conference where Milo was going to be a featured speaker, given what he was saying about that. There's something that's a bridge too far. And that's it. That's one of those bridges too far. And so I will be going, and I will be broadcasting from there live Thursday and Friday, just so you know. But that's the story on Milo. It's very sad, actually. A story that he tells about being molested by his priest. Of course, he says it as though it's fine. But you know it isn't fine. You know it's not fine at all. In fact, Robert Oscar Lopez, our friend who was a formerly gay man, I don't know if he identifies still as bisexual. I doubt it. He's married and has a few kids. He's a professor from California. We're going to put Bobby's piece on our Facebook page because Bobby brings such great perspective to this. If I had the time, I would have called him and talked to him this morning, and maybe we will at a later date. But his article in the stream is called Milo Yiannopoulos' Controversial Comments Reveals Hypocrisy Within the LGBT Community. Very thoughtful piece, very insightful, and we'll put that on our Facebook page. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, speaking of public policy and all of these kinds of matters, Jeff Sessions has put a cog in the works for the Barack Obama insistence that transgender bathrooms be installed in public schools. And so AFA is leading the charge to thank Senator Sessions for his actions on this. Attorney General Sessions. He's just been in office a few days here. And so if you would like to join us in thanking him, go to AFA Action and sign the petition. And then I have much more to say. Let's see how quickly I can say it. Yes, you know that the president picked Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster to be National Security Advisor. The bad news is there's lots of concern about him, tremendous concern about him. Jihad Watch reports that in a lecture he gave to the War College and many others assembled who are experts in national terrorism, he made the statement that the Islamic State is not Islamic. Of course, at the time, this was the Obama position on this, the Obama administration. McMaster was under him, but this is the point. How could a general who was knowledgeable about Islam make such a statement? It's very, very troubling, and so people that I know in the national security world are not happy about this pick. They're very concerned about it and just wondering why it is that the president is getting advice to continually appoint people who are bad on the issue of Islam. And some are speculating it's because the part of the administration that he's appointed mainstream Republicans, they are blind on this issue, either willingly or willfully, or willfully or unwittingly. Either way, it's very dangerous. And so we have a new national security advisor. John Bolton would have been my pick if he'd asked me. He didn't ask me. John knows about all parts of the world. He's made himself a scholar on every area. And if McMaster is saying that the Islamic State is not Islamic, this is just ignorance beyond the pale for a national security advisor. So I am concerned. All right, we'll take a break and talk about what's coming out this morning, and that's the new executive order on immigration. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
A real estate collapse, sensuality, political rancor, a nasty election. Those were all characteristics of our nation in the 1790s, right before the Second Great Awakening.
President of Life Action Ministries and founder of One Cry, Byron Paulus.
The effects of the Second Great Awakening lasted for more than 50 years. Tens of thousands of churches came into existence. Hundreds of colleges and universities began. Hospitals were built. The modern mission movement began. We are still realizing the effects in our nation today. But awakenings don't just happen. They're preceded when God's people get together to seek Him.
If your heart longs for another great awakening in America, then meet us at Fusion, a Heart Cry for Revival conference in late April in Asheville, North Carolina. Find out more at heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A lot of folks are wondering what in the world the American Conservative Union was thinking, inviting and then disinviting Breitbart editor Milo Yiannopoulos to CPAC, the Super Bowl for conservatives. They rescinded the invitation after an offensive video surfaced showing Milo condoning pedophilia. Milo says the videos were edited, but it's still downright disgusting, folks. The website Reagan Battalion first uncovered the videos over the weekend. But even before that, many in the conservative movement were wondering why CPAC would give a keynote spot to someone who very publicly says he is not a conservative. CPAC is about celebrating conservatives, and it seems to me, instead of focusing on celebrities, they should truly honor the conservatives out there fighting the good fight. Conservatives who don't earn a paycheck to be a conservative. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Eleven unidentified passengers walked through a security lane without being screened at JFK Airport early Monday because the TSA left the area open and unattended. Law enforcement sources said a security camera captured a metal detector going off three times as the travelers walked through the screening lane at the airport. The breach happened around 6:05 a.m. at JetBlue's Terminal 5, but 2 hours passed before Transportation Security Administration officials notified the Port Authority Police Department. When they were finally notified, Port Authority cops flooded the terminal equipped with surveillance photos of the travelers, but none of them could be found. In a statement, the TSA said it was reviewing the incident.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's not a good quality report, but it's the Daily News out of New York yesterday. That's an amazing story. The TSA did not man their posts, and they allowed all these people to walk through security without being screened. Well, we have a problem, and that's one of the things that Donald Trump tried to address in his first executive order. Not TSA screeners being absent, but just the whole issue of taking care about who is coming into this country and who's being allowed to go through screening. Well, I've asked a guest this morning, you know, Numbers USA is probably the biggest, most powerful immigration voice. It's the grassroots voice in America for borders and enforcing our law. And Chris Schmielinski, is that right, Chris?
That's right.
Well, I'm proud of myself. Anyway, Chris is with Numbers USA. They are good friends to me. I think the world of this organization. I have to tell you this right up front. A lot of my information comes from them. And so, Chris, my first question is, since the executive order was put on stay by the judge in Washington State and then by the Ninth Circuit, what do we know about who's come across through our airports? Do we know anything about who's gotten in the interim here?
Not really. You know, we don't. We know that obviously President Trump was trying to pause the entry from nationals from these seven countries that they identified, and we've learned in recent weeks that of the terrorists convicted since 9/11, 72 of them have come from these seven countries. So the order was certainly just, but in this interim period, since those initial restraining orders were placed on the executive order, you know, stopping the program, you know, we're not really sure. It's not like a ton of people do enter the country from these seven countries, but certainly the ones that do come in are a higher risk to the safety and security of the United States. So we'll probably know a little bit more in the coming weeks when DHS starts to release some more of that data. But for now, you know, they're still coming off of, they're still basing stuff off of the Obama administration's reporting. And of course, they weren't very transparent in their reporting. They still haven't released data beyond 2015 for entries into the United States. So I think we'll learn a little bit more in the next couple of weeks. I guess the only thing we can hope is that, you know, nothing that puts our country at risk, nobody who could put our country at risk came through the doors in the last 2 weeks.
You know, Chris, I want to go back to your comment because you just said 70. We at least know 75 of the terror incidents individuals came from those seven countries, and that's significant. What you just said is significant because we know that. Remember, Judge Robart, and even I think some of the Ninth Circuit the justices boldly boasted that you know there have been no problems in those countries. We have nothing documented that any kind of terrorist did anything, succeeded with any kind of terror plan who came from those seven countries. And that is just flatly a lie, isn't it?
It really is. Obviously, we have this proof. So the Senate Immigration Subcommittee compiled the list back in 2016, and they came up with a list of about 500 individuals who had been convicted of terror-related crimes since 9/11. 72 of them came from these seven countries, and 33 of the 72 were convicted of very serious terror-related charges. So we know that definitely foreign nationals from these seven countries are at risk, and if these seven countries, if individuals from these seven countries aren't a risk, then why did Congress overwhelmingly pass a bill at the end of 2015 that restricted nationals from these seven countries from the visa waiver program? The bill received more than 400 votes in the House and was signed into law by President Obama. So the last administration recognized that these seven countries and future entrants from these seven countries were a risk. You know, President Trump was just kind of taking the next step forward. So the Obama administration already tightened the vetting procedures. Trump was just taking the next step further, pausing it for 90 days just so they could review those vetting procedures that were in place, and the judges shut it down.
Well, it's just more silliness. It's really silliness. I don't think it's just silliness. It's untethered from reality. I don't think anybody would look at those seven countries and argue with any serious mental faculty that there couldn't be threats coming out of those countries. So it's just that people, it's like they can say ridiculous things and we're supposed to believe them, and that's what they're doing and getting away with. At least they have been. But Chris,
right, and you look at all the polling, you know, going back to, you know, can people argue that this is bad policy? You look at most of the public polls that have come out, a vast majority of Americans either support the order that was ordered at stay that the judges shut down, and the ones that didn't receive a majority opinion, at least a plurality of Americans support it. So on a whole, Americans do recognize that Trump was just trying to take steps to keep the country safe from possible foreign foreign visitors.
Yeah, common sense would teach all of us that. And you, we should do the poll, you know, right after a terrorist attack and see how people feel. People have not forgotten. It's just that Congress and these judges. Anyway, Chris, we understand that a new order probably will be issued this morning. Maybe even as we speak, it's being issued. I don't know. What do you know about that? There's a lot of talk, a lot of buzz. What do you know about it?
Well, what we do know is that they're going to try to address the issues that were raised by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals when they upheld Judge Robart, the Washington judge's first temporary restraining order. So some of the things that they mentioned in their opinion was that, first, it was unfair to the states that Trump was blocking the entry or the travel of current green card holders and current visa holders from these seven countries. So what they were saying is that these states, which oversee public universities, had students from these countries, and this order was preventing them from going home, or ones that have gone home to visit family or whatever would not be allowed to come back into the country, and that the executive order provided no due process for those folks that would be denied entry. So we expect that they'll address those two things, that one, they'll probably add into the executive order, even though the White House did come out that weekend that the order was released shortly after January 27th. They came out immediately and said green card holders are exempt. The judges want to see that explicitly in the executive order. They want to know that green card holders can travel back and forth. They also want to know that anybody who currently holds a visa is able to travel back and forth. And for some reason, if they aren't going to allow them to travel back and forth, they want to make sure that there is a process laid out in the executive order that allows them to find out, to appeal the decision, say, we think we should be able to enter the United States. We've had a visa for a year, several years, whatever. We want to get back into the United States. They want to at least have a process laid out instead of just this blanket pause that says nobody can enter from these seven countries.
Chris, I don't know if you're an attorney or not, but I guess so this may be a legal question. But the first order now is like in la-la land. Who knows where this first order is? It's, you know, got all these challenges, I think 40, something like that. Now, the second order is going to be issued. So, you know, there are going to be lawsuits. No matter what this order says, there will still be lawsuits filed.
Right.
Again, this is a legal question. Have you guys thought through what you think, how he's going to get this through, given the irrational and also, I would say, unconstitutional resistance to his full rights and authority as president?
Right, and I think that's why they're really taking their time with this order. You mentioned that it could be being released now. I've heard that it could be released this morning. I've also heard that it may not be released until the end of the week, so we don't know when it's going to be issued. I think what they want to make sure is that they do dot all the I's and cross all the T's and try to cover all the different challenges that have come across. You know, one thing that I didn't mention was that this is supposedly, quote unquote, a Muslim ban. It only impacts 12% of the world's Muslim population. And the countries weren't chosen because of their Muslim populations. Again, they were chosen because they were identified by both Congress and President Obama back in 2015. And I don't think, as you said, anybody in the country can argue that these seven countries identified in the order are not hotspots for terror. So, even the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals did not make a ruling on both the states of Washington and Minnesota in their challenge the First Amendment constitutionality of the executive order because it targets Muslim countries, Muslim-majority countries. But the Ninth Circuit didn't rule on that. They said that as of right now, there's not enough evidence. And even whatever evidence they have, they're using evidence based on from statements that President Trump made on the campaign trail a year ago. So that's what they're trying to base it on, where they should be ruling on what the order does and what countries the order targets. That's another thing that I would expect, that the Trump administration in the executive order may try to give a little bit more rationale as to why they picked the seven countries. They did in the initial order. They did say that we picked these seven countries because they were identified in the Visa Waiver Program Improvement and Terrorist Prevention Act that was passed by Congress back in 2015. But I'm not a lawyer, but I do know that they have attorneys working on it and some very talented attorneys. So My guess is that they're trying to do everything they possibly can to make this executive order, the new issued executive order, as airtight as possible. One thing I did want to mention was that there were a bunch of other provisions in that executive order that were not touched by any of those 40 challenges. The biometric entry exit system, for example, the complete reevaluation of all visa entry procedures and the implementation of quote-unquote extreme vetting, reducing the refugee cap from the one that President Obama set for 2016 at 110,000 down to 50,000. So there were a lot of the points from that first executive order that are still in place, but again, we're looking at these three or four provisions that the judges did block, and hopefully the Trump administration will be able to address all of those in their new order.
So, Chris, and then in the first order, those parts that weren't addressed, they were still not allowed to go forward, though, were they? Since it's the whole thing that was stayed.
No, yeah. It was just five provisions.
They just those provisions.
Five
okay.
Provisions.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. Now,
yep.
Here's an interesting. You know, John Kelly is the new Department of Homeland Security. He seems to be producing. Say that. He just called for 10,000 additional ICE officers and agents and 5,000 new hires at U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Are you guys, Numbers USA, are you pleased with what you're seeing from John Kelly so far?
On the enforcement side, absolutely. These two memos that came out over the weekend are fantastic. They rescind every single memo that was issued by the Obama administration on immigration enforcement. The only two things it didn't rescind, which were a little displeased with, DACA and DAPA, the DACA and DAPA amnesties. Of course, DAPA has been stayed by the courts, so that never rolled out. DACA is the one that we're most concerned about. But, you know, we understand that that's a delicate issue. We would have liked to see it stopped on day one, but we'll look and see how the administration addresses it over the next couple of weeks and months. But everything else in the memos was fantastic. One thing that it did was encouraged increased cooperation in the 287G program, which allows local communities to assist federal immigration officers in immigration enforcement. So it's not just sanctuary cities, which requires them to communicate and honor ICE detainer requests, but it actually deputizes local police. The local police departments have to volunteer for the program. It's their choice to volunteer for it. They don't have to do it. It's not required. But the fact that they're encouraging it after it was discouraged and basically ignored by the Obama administration, it's a good sign to see that he's taking immigration enforcement seriously. And he also said that no classes of illegal aliens in the country will be excluded from enforcement. So we've seen that in the last weekend when they had some of the immigration enforcement actions that ICE took, where they swept up some folks that they had identified. Under the Obama administration, they were only taking into custody folks that they had previously identified. This time, if they identify somebody and they find that person, and that person happens to be with three or four other illegal aliens who aren't on their list, they'll also take those three or four illegal aliens into custody, too. They're called collateral aliens, I think. So,
okay.
He's taken a lot of good actions. And of course, ending the catch and release policy along the border. And we just learned yesterday that they're closing down some of the temporary holding facilities that they have along the border, because we've already seen the number of border apprehensions reduced, which is usually a direct reflection on how many people are trying to come across the border illegally. It seems that the message is reaching some of the countries south of the border.
Border
is finally closed.
You might have to come see me at CPAC after all, because there's more to talk about. Chris, Schmielinski, and Chris is with Numbers USA. And we didn't even get to Tom Cotton's piece of legislation to limit immigration in general. But you have to come to CPAC and see me. Chris, thank you so much for joining me, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also Executive Vice President of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800-FAMILIES extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
OneMillionDads.com is where men can learn and grow together as men of the cross. Close families and even national revival begin at home with strong fathers in the faith.
I really like how the website provides so many articles. They're all just dead on to help me as a father.
Go to the website, read the articles. You're not alone. OneMillionDads.com. Lead or others will.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139 it says, "For you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you. From AFR.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump's new national security advisor is Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. He's a decorated warrior, military historian, and author of Dereliction of Duty, a case study of what happens when America's political leadership is willfully blind to the nature of the enemy and therefore incapable of defeating them. Unfortunately, this Vietnam-era syndrome has operated since 9/11, too. Politicians of both parties have failed to understand that Islam's Sharia supremacism animates the terrorism we face around the world and what Mr. Trump calls the networks in our society that support radicalization. Those networks are mostly operated here by the Muslim Brotherhood. President Trump has repeatedly pledged to defeat such forces. It would be a dereliction of duty were his national security advisor, who has long served under presidents who have gotten it wrong, to fail to help one who gets it right succeed. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sweden, home to hot blondes, dead Vikings, and the Swedish chef. Now, add another thing to this list. Sweden is now the proud owner of the title, the rape capital of Europe. Score! Sweden has always had a reputation of being a harmonious and liberal society. This image has been shattered as rape has skyrocketed over the past 5 years. At the same time, Sweden has been going through a revolutionary demographic shift that has seen the country take in more refugees from Islamic countries than any Western nation in the world. This immigration has led to culture clashes and to enclaves of self-contained societies across Sweden. This is Annika Henroth-Rostein. She's a Swedish journalist who has extensively covered the Middle Eastern migration into Sweden.
What we have is, first of all, a Swedish culture. Then we bring in, last year, 190,000 people that come from a very different culture, a culture that isn't liberal, that has radically different views on women, on sexuality, on gender, on all of these things. There's an explosion.
All right, you've heard me play that like not a few times, right? We've talked about what's happening in Sweden. We've played Ami's documentary. We posted it on our Facebook page. But ironically, Tucker Carlson used Ami's video last Friday night, last Thursday night in his show. I think it was Thursday. I think it was Friday night. And then Saturday, Donald Trump came to Florida and mentioned this and said, we saw last night what happened in Sweden. Well, he's not talking about what happened just last night in Sweden, but they're using that sloppy use of words, as we are all want to do when we do public speaking, to discredit the president on his comments about Ami's video. In fact, John Roberts last night on Fox set it up this way. Listen to John Roberts.
The president was forced to walk back statements he made about Sweden's immigration policy on Saturday when he appeared to suggest there was an immigration-related incident in Sweden the previous night.
You look at what's happening last night in Sweden. Sweden. Who would believe this? Sweden. They took in large numbers. They're having problems like they never thought possible.
After Swedish officials asked for a clarification on Sunday, the president said he was reacting to a report he had seen on TV, tweeting, quote, "My statement as to what's happening in Sweden was in reference to a story that was broadcast on Fox News concerning immigrants in Sweden."
All right, so there you go. There's John. As though the fact that he said what's happening last night in Sweden, as though that is the story. No, the story is what's happening in Sweden. It's not that Donald Trump misspoke and sort of sounded like it happened in Sweden last night. He's talking about a report he saw last night in Sweden. So, yeah. So here we go. So the Swedish prime minister comes on television, and this is what he says.
I was, like many others, I believe, surprised by the comments made about Sweden this weekend. So yes, we have opportunities, we have challenges, we're working with them every day. But I think also we must all take responsibility for using facts correctly and for verifying any information that we spread.
All right, so yeah, it's rumors. I mean, it's just we have to have the facts. You know, in other words, here we go with the false news story, fake news. You know, you have to understand that whole fake news impetus. And I am concerned about fake news, but I know what fake news is, and so do you, right? And it's not when the truth is spoken. So Europe is like the leading the charge on suppressing free speech. It's just amazing. And so when Tucker Carlson then asked Ami Horowitz, who did this video, to come in with him and talk to him a little bit about this, Ami had to defend the stats, you know, that he was using. In fact, let's skip to cut five, where Ami's talking to Tucker about where he got his information. Let's listen.
I went through these stats before the video, while I was editing the video, I went through them all over again. So BRA, which is the keeper of all statistics, of crime statistics in Sweden, I went through them specifically. So to give you some exact numbers. So between 2012 and 2016, the murder rate is up almost 70%. This is Swedes' statistics. Rape between 2007 and 2015 is up a similar number, almost 70%. These are their statistics, not my statistics.
All right, but in spite of that, Tucker has on a Swedish woman who is the U.S. correspondent for Expressen. And this is what she says in regard to the statistics. Let's listen.
Here's the Swedish National Council, I'm not making this up, BRA, it's what Ami was just saying. According to their stats, rape was up 13% last year, 2016. That's a big rise. Overall crimes were up in 2016, 6.5%. That's 1.5 million crimes. That's a lot of crimes.
Well, that I don't know exactly where you got those numbers from.
From the Swedish National Council.
Yeah, okay. The numbers that we've been looking at, and I mean, I'm not here to defend,
no, I just,
defend Sweden or anything. I'm a news
reporter.
I like
Sweden. I'm not against Sweden.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a news reporter. But
yeah.
But if you look at the overall numbers and what it's been going on for in a long term, the numbers are definitely going down. It's decreasing, but and actually one of the crimes that has been decreased the most during last year that was rape. But also, if you look at rape in a wider historical perspective, or like 10 years or 15 years, there are some periods of time when it's gone up because the definition of rape and sexual assault in Sweden has been wider. So more incidents are now considering being rape and sexual assault. So that could be one of the reasons, if you look at your numbers, I'm
right.
not sure exactly what numbers you are, but that could be one of the reasons why it's now looks like it's been more of them when it's actually
because
just
the definition.
Rape.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that may be true. Just think, again, these are government numbers from Sweden. This is not something that I cooked up in my office backstage. But the overall crime rate, they said in 2016, 1.5 million more crimes than the year before. Look, I mean, the numbers are pretty clear. The Sweden stopped keeping crime stats based on national origin in 2001 because they were embarrassing. But when they did keep them, they showed, well, why else would they not keep them, that foreign-born men were far more likely, four or five times more likely to commit violent crimes, sex crimes, than Swedish-born men.
All right, so that was just a little bit. You hear her. No, actually, rape has gone down. No. In fact, it's gone down the most. It's the category of crime that's gone down the most. When the crime stats in Sweden, according to the Swedish, whatever it's called, are up by 70%, murder up by 70%. And while I'm talking to you, I have to give a programming note. Adam, if you could find the clip of those policemen, I think we have that from that original video. I would love to play that too. And if you can't find it, I'll talk about it. But what's going on here? Well, in Ami's video, in his documentary on what's going on in Sweden, he interviews two women. After he's presented all of his information, he interviews these two women. And I want you to hear, you've heard this before because I've played this several times on this show. I want you to hear what they have to say when Ami asks them about what they're seeing in Sweden. Let's listen.
Do you think the sexual assault problem is an Islamic problem or not?
No. I think it's a gender problem. Among men.
Yeah, the problem isn't like this culture or that culture. The problem is male culture.
I don't think the immigrants is the problem.
No, it's not. Like, that's just like a tiny bit of the problem. And like, when that happens, like, it's because we didn't like bring them in the right way.
And I don't see that connection at all. And I would very much like to see the evidence of such a connection.
Do you think it's almost racist to make that connection?
Yes, I think so.
Is there a point where you think that Sweden's done too much to bring people in, or do you think there's...
No, there is no too much in helping people.
And is there a limit, do you think, to how many immigrants Sweden can take?
No.
That is so interesting. You could dissect almost every comment on that. So the women, no. It's not a Muslim problem. It's a problem of men. It's the increase in rape, just men in general, not Muslim men. Is it racist to say, oh, yes, it's racist? All right. So Ami interviews these two policemen, and I think this is the most telling thing. And if you've seen the video, these guys, I think they just look like, to me, they look beaten down, like policemen who are just caught in the crosshairs. That's my editorial remark when I see them. But I want you to hear what they said before President Trump cited this and before the president of Sweden, the PM of Sweden, went on television and before all of this apoplexy about the fact that Donald Trump might have said it happened in Sweden last night when he was talking about a thing he'd seen on television in regard to Sweden last night. All right, so these two policemen, before all this dust up, were interviewed by Ami, and this is what they said.
Anders Gorazin and Jacob Ekstrom are veteran and decorated policemen who have decades of experience and are tasked with policing within the immigrant community.
Has there been an increase in violence and crime here in Sweden?
More violence and harder violence with guns and...
What type of weapons are you guys seeing on the streets?
You can see
Kalashnikovs, hand grenades from the east, guns, handguns, everything you can find in Afghanistan, you can find here.
Doesn't Sweden have very strict gun laws?
For sure, you know, and we get, all the time we get new laws about guns, tighten up more. I think it's good, but you know, the violence increase anyway.
Would you go as far as to say that these no-go areas are essentially states within a state?
Yeah, most of the no-go areas is like that.
Are there areas where if you're pursuing somebody, where you'll simply stop and not pursue them once they get into this no-go area?
Yeah.
If the police is chasing another car for some kind of crime, if they reach what we call no-go areas, the police wouldn't go after it.
Do you see the violence really spreading across Sweden into the cities?
At least one or two times a week.
And let's say 5 years ago, how often would you say it was?
No.
Three times a year.
Really? The increase in this kind of crime is exponential.
I think we caught off guard. We didn't expect it to be so much increase.
Do you think there's a deliberate attempt to cover up these type of crimes?
Rather than that they don't want to seem racist.
Is there a sort of sensitivity or people scared that if you identify who's committing these type of crimes, that you could be labeled a racist?
Of course. I think this is these issues make people nervous all over the world, not only even in Sweden. It's make me nervous as well.
Make me nervous as well. Two policemen, and of course, after the dust-up with Donald Trump, after it's become international news, the policemen are saying, oh, they didn't mean that. And of course, the other ones, if you could understand their Swedish accents, they said no-go zones, the no-go zones. And Ami asked them, what's the uptick in crime? At least now once or twice a week. And what was it before? Oh, maybe three times a year. The Swedish stats are showing that rape is up 70%, murder up 70%. You hear them saying, Ami asks, what kinds of weapons are you seeing? Kalashnikovs and all kinds of weapons from the East. Isn't Sweden a gun-free country? Yes, but, and so you heard what they said. And now supposedly Donald Trump is like an idiot for mentioning this because how dare he like say it was happening in Sweden last night? When he was talking about, he saw the report on Tucker Carlson last night, Friday night. So it's ridiculousness. John Roberts was being ridiculous. It is a serious problem. We see it happening in Germany. Remember all of those New Year's Eve rapes? I have seen video after video myself from people who are following this kind of stuff about what's happening in Europe. Would it not make sense, ladies and gentlemen, even the rape issue, the crime might go up a little bit? But the people, the apologists are saying, oh, no, it's gone down. It's gone down. Oh, no, there's nothing here. Nothing here. It would be much more believable if they would say it's increased, but not by much. That would be much more believable. But no, they say, oh, no, it's gone down. Oh, no, there's nothing to it. Oh, no, it's just nothing to see here. Listen, something is happening. Something is rotten in Denmark or Sweden or Europe and maybe in America. But the truth has to be told about what's happening. And we're going to post this video on our Facebook page again for you to watch so that you can know what I believe is the truth about what's going on in Sweden. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.